after we stayed there one night, and Ed Brathen and Percy DeWolf, and that's when Roosevelt was running to be president, and he told us to talk a whole lot about Roosevelt and run him down, because old Fanning, he was a big Democrat, you know, he was really a Democrat. Oh boy, he, the old fella, long about 11 o'clock. He says, by gosh, he says, you fellas will just have to quit. He says, I'm just plumb give out. I can remember, it's a sure tickle Percy. Teasing the old fella. Yeah. But the spring, the breakup of 37, that's what run old Fanning out, and he come down here. Mm-hmm. Well, he just got out and made the hill in time. He had a place about 20, 22 miles up the river. Boy, that was sure some dive to be at the roadhouse. He had a big old long mustache and a little goatee, you know, and he'd stand there with his fork, fix, you know, getting ready to turn his hotcakes over and comb his whiskers, and he slobbered. He had a bib on. Slobbered. Well, they tasted good.
Charlie Martin used to like to tell about the old guy, but I don't think it was John Fanning.
Yes, don't you?
That had the cat that used to like to sleep the nice warm sourdough hotcakes. Yeah. He'd make Kitty move over while he threw another hotcake on the stack. I did listen to John. He can tell that was really funny. Get over, Kitty.
Yeah, he's quite a John.
Well, yes, Al, have you lived in Eagle? Have you worked and lived in this area for a long time? Or?
No, I've been here a long time ago, but I never lived here.
You never lived here?
I lived here 2 or 3 years on their first
off marriage. Off and on, we lived. But we really haven't lived very many years in steady.
Well, you would, maybe you could, I want to ask about Nimrod. Get on the subject of Nimrod. You knew him? You knew Nimrod.
Nimrod? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so did you, and you must have.
Well, Al knew Nimrod, too. Yeah.
Well,
Alberta.
When did he come to this country? Does anybody really
know? Well, as near as I know, it must have been in 98.
I don't know when he came from Maine, but I don't remember.
Yeah, he came from the state of Maine.
He was around as far back as I can remember.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he lived right next to you, didn't he? In a little house right in there.
I don't remember when he came. I mean, I don't remember hearing when he came.
No, I don't know.
Did he live next door to your family?
Yeah, he lived right across the street here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how did he get the name Nimrod? Or did he have it before you...
Maybe. Well, he had it before he got here, in a way, but he was a jeweler by trade, but he also was like a lot of other state of Mainers. He was a guide in the fall, guiding hunters, and Nimrod, he was quite a rifle shot, contrary to a lot of opinions. Because
especially
yes, yeah, he that is according to the I got a copy of this Life magazine, not Life but True magazine, that printed a story that the vice president or vice president of vice president of Eastern Airlines, he was up here one time and Dick brought him over on a trip. Holly, and while he was here, why, he asked me a lot of questions, and he also wrote later, asked me a lot of questions about Nimrod, and I answered him as near as truthfully as I could. And he sent this manuscript to the True magazine, and what they printed was altogether different than what his manuscript was. I've still got his manuscript here someplace and everything. But that True magazine, they tore it all to pieces and claimed that he, contrary to a lot of opinion, that he was a fine rifle shot. They said he was mediocre. Yeah, well, he had shot at Seagirt, New Jersey. That was the Camp Perry of the East, you know. He had to be pretty good or he didn't get there. No. And he had won medals and stuff. You didn't get all that stuff, you know, without being a pretty fair rifle shot. Yeah.
But he came in here as a stampeder.
I'm pretty sure he must have. But here he fixed watches and made jewelry and made knives. And I've got one of his knives. My gosh, it's still down there in that box. I got to get that home. Geez, I'm sure glad of it. It's in my toolbox down there. Al's got one of them.
Don't leave it down there. Somebody could come down and steal it.
Yeah, boy, I meant to get it today. That's what I went down there for in the first place. Forgot that and got to fiddling around with gas tanks. I went and pumped a bunch of stuff out of the gas tank that was just full of mud. And I didn't strain it or nothing. I sure got a mess of mud in it, too. I drained that all out. Heaved it over the back end of the boat.
When he was here, he was always in a stew to get out to the creek. He was losing money all the time. When he was out there, he was in a stew to get back in here. But he never... He was, like they said, he could do anything but make a living. He didn't know how to charge for anything that he did. Just a minimum charge in anything, you know. But he made these nice puzzle rings, which were really nice. He'd melt the gold, you know, and make the wire. Well, part of the time he sent out and got the wire, too. He was real good at jewelry.
Do you have anything that, any piece of jewelry that he might have made?
No, I don't think so. I had that one ring, but I lost it.
Well, did he live here most of the time, or did he live out in the creeks?
Well, about half and half, I guess.
Yeah.
Spent most of his winters in town, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was one winter, 29 and 30 or so, no, 30, 31. I was out at Alder Creek, and that was the Christmas that he made that knife for me. Mm-hmm. He was there at Flume that winter. Well, that is until after New Year's, I know.
What did he make the knife out of? What did he make the knife out of?
An old file.
Yeah. And what's the handle made with?
I could go down and get it.
Don't get it tonight.
Yeah, well, it's too dark for me to run around with that.
Usually it's a piece of gun stock or something. Hardwood, yeah.
For the handle, yeah. And a lot of them, he inlaid a nice nugget on the handle. Has yours got a nugget? Yeah, mine don't. He didn't have any.
Saw that map he made. They have it up in the courtroom.
Oh, yeah, I'll say
that's
it.
That's beautiful.
It is. It's a very accurate piece of work,
too. That's what I understand.
I know Earl Brabb brags about it, and so is a lot more of them. Say it's about as accurate as anything that they could get. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says it's more accurate than some of the work they've done.
Well, did he have training in surveying, or was he just a self-taught man?
I don't know what he had, but
he must have been a perpetual student.
I think he took that off of one of the maps because it's right one of the old early Eagle quadrangle.
Yeah.
That I had one of those, and it's down right to the last little.
From a contour map.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would have had to personally survey that to make it like.
Yeah. Well, they said he was out in the hills for all summer.
Oh, he couldn't possibly.
He couldn't cover all that territory.
No,
not in several.
He could with a helicopter, perhaps, but not with.
Because he had that right down to the last little tributary on.
Well, when did he make that relief map?
That was made, for the AYP, Alaska Yukon Expedition, 1909 and 10.
What was?
In Seattle, yeah.
9 and 10.
That's what it was made for.
Well, he must have made it here in Eagle then.
Mm-hmm. We boxed it up one time, and Dick Hawley undertook to take it out with Pan American to that last Seattle expedition or something, whatever they had there. And they shipped it back too, in care of Sig Wald, and Sig held it for a while, and we finally got it back over to Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, then the topographic map that you have, is that dated before?
I don't know what the date on that is. I only have part of it left that shows this. Well, from Eagle out into the part of this country.
Yeah, I've got one 1905, I think it is.
I don't know what this is.
A topographic
map
that shows contour.
One of the first contour maps.
Oh, I see. Well, then I could understand where he could have some guidance in making that, but I just couldn't imagine.
Well, he had to have some guidance.
Keeping it and put it upstairs. I'm going to look and see for a minute.
Well, who put that out then? Was that the Water
Department?
It's
a government map, yeah.
Well, was there, do you recall if it's USGS or?
No, I couldn't.
I don't think
say
there's USGS at that time.
I don't know what they
didn't call it that.
That map was so old. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I don't even know where it is now. It's among some of my junk down the basement, I guess.
I think it's in Polk.
Because all I have is just a little.
Just a part of it.
Small, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is just a dead ringer for it.
Yeah.
I know Fred Terwilliger and I both, when we saw that, we remarked, we went traveled in that country a lot on foot, and we traveled by that map, and it isn't even accurate. It'll show tributaries that aren't even there. And vice versa, yeah. That Nimrod map did exactly the same.
So what does that say?
I don't have my glasses, I can't see that well. Quick, get my glasses. Contour interval, 200 feet. Let's see. Edition of April 1899, reprinted August 1910.
What are you looking for, Daddy?
I'm looking for this here big round thing.
Well, it was right there.
Yeah, I got it. I finally saw the handle sticking out from under.
Right down here.
Yeah, that's the same kind of map. Mine isn't. Not this
Alaska.
Same map, but that's that same survey.
It's U.S. Geological Survey.
Yeah.
That's
George
so.
Otis Smith, map. Director. Reconnaissance map, Alaska.
When is it made?
It says down here at the bottom, Alaska sheet number 640, edition of April 1899.
Oh.
Reprinted August 1910.
Oh, yeah.
Reprinted.
That's the reason I've been hanging on to it.
That's the same map.
Oh, that's a real prize. That'd be interesting to compare to a current topographic map of this very same area.
Well, I know what you'd find. You'd find some creeks on the other one that isn't even on this, and vice versa, because some of these, they couldn't go over the whole thing. They'd get on top of the mountains and look at it with field glasses and triangulate it.
Yeah.
From the big mountains, and then they just trace in the best they could some of these. Well, some of them weren't creeks at all. They looked like they were creeks from where they were looking.
Well, Sam White came across in 25, and he triangulated from Fairbanks he come out over on Columbia, on O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
He and a fellow by the name of McKenzie. It was all summer. They had six pack horses. They walked, but they were on. Sam was on all the high points with this surveying instrument, you know, and surveyed from one point, and they put up little rock gears.
When was that, Barney? 1925.
Yeah, 1925. Sam. They said that was the first triangulation, but really good one, between here and Eagle, between here and Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was from Mount Sorensen south and all over in between.
Just the two of them?
Clear across here.
Just Sam and one other?
One fellow by the name of McKenzie,
Did they have any packers or helpers?
They had pack horses. Yeah, had six pack horses, and they sold them when they got here in Eagle.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer they had a canoe come up from Nenana on the steamboat. And they got on it that fall and drifted down river to Circle and got off and walked across to Fairbanks. Yeah, they walked all the way. Yeah, he sent me a picture of a bluff. And him in the canoe and his dog. But he thought it was Calico Bluff. Or no, the bluff here at Eagle. What in the world become of that now? That picture. I don't know just what the heck become of that picture. But I just got it this way. Excuse me.
Barney, you were telling me, let's go back to Nimrod when he died. Tell me about when he died.
Well, I'll tell you.
And where he died?
Well, he died between here and the 70 mile. He was over on the 70 mile down below Rock Creek quite a ways, right at the head of the canyon. There's a small canyon over here. Up from the mouth a ways, and he was up at the head of that. He had a little teepee there that he used to stay in, and he had been there for quite a little while, living on practically nothing, I suppose, sourdough weeds, seeds, you know, that's what he made his bread out of.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of mashed those old sourdough seeds
made
up.
Flour and made flour
out
of it. Really?
Made a bread out of it, yeah. Okay. And that fall, it was a nice open fall. And then all at once, when it did clamp down, you remember, it just went down just 30 below practically overnight.
What year was that?
I don't know what year it was.
37 or 38 he died?
You were talking about
that. Oh, no, it was later than that, 15.
Schoenberger, see, it was Adolph Schoenberger and Charlie.
Yeah, Adolph Schoenberger and Charlie Biedemann and some more of them went over there and got him, didn't he?
Well, that was in the 40s.
That have to be before World War II.
Was it before?
When did it was before World War II, I'm pretty sure.
Late 1930s, isn't it?
In the
49, about 1939 or 40, I would guess.
Somewhere along about there.
But he'd headed over to the 70 mile?
Yeah, and he had his own way of coming from the 70 mile here to town, and he'd come down through what they call Lost Creek up here, and that's the way he was headed across. When they found him up there. I saw his gun sticking up or something, I think, wasn't he? Up against a tree or something.
Schoenberger had an airplane. I know they were flying quite a bit trying to...
I remember the flying around in that little kite that Schoenberger had.
Why did he say... did he say he'd be back at a certain time and then didn't show up?
Or? Yeah, he didn't show up.
Well, I don't really know. If someone went by his camp and found him gone, I don't recall that anymore.
I don't
either. It seemed like someone went by there and said, well, he was gone, and he hadn't been there for quite a while.
Yeah.
And so then they started looking
So they found him in a, where, just along the trail?
Yeah,
the
I
river,
guess they finally found some tracks in the snow and they got to follow him.
I think he was right on the creek. He'd played out and given up. He lay down, I think he even crossed his arm. He just lay right down on the creek.
And you know, he always said that they'd never have to break any of his bones to get him in a coffin.
Yeah.
Mhm. Like some of them, they did, you know.
Yeah,
they broke them in order to straighten them out to get them in, you know.
So he just lay down and.
He just laid right down there, and they found him glaciered in partly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The cricket started glaciering up.
Oh, yeah, the time you've lived in Eagle, were there ever any real serious crimes over here? Any murders or?
No, not that I know. Can't recall any murders or anything.
Might have been back in the days of the claim jumpers.
I don't ever remember hearing about any.
Nope.
We used to have some fights over in the 40 mile, but nobody ever really got murdered.
Over what? Mining?
Over mining
claims.
No one really was shot. There would be threatened. That's the worst.
There was one fellow got shot, but he claimed he took him for a bee. Thought he was a bear.
You mean how?
Picking blueberries or something, wasn't it?
You get killed?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Got half shot.
Huh? You're half shot. Yeah.
Well, after you and Ole left Fairbanks, when did you leave Fairbanks to come back over here?
No, we stayed over there most of the time, and
see, you said you were back over here when your son Jim went to school in Fairbanks and lived with
in 1944, the fall of 44, we come home here to Eagle. I quit the FE, and I haven't worked for him since, only that summer over there for a while at Chicken. And I was sold out down here, so we were in town just to get some stuff that spring and of 65, when we ran into Jimmy Crawford on the Cushman Street, right by 2nd, and he wanted to know what I was doing. I said, nothing. He said, Barney, he said, will you go over to Chicken for me? And I said, yeah, okay. And he said, will you come down to the office in the morning? We'll talk it over. So I went down to the office in the morning, and there was Jack and Jim and myself there, and we talked about it. And they wanted me to go over to Chicken, and figured I had to have a legitimate job, you know, to kind of hide what I was there for. And he wanted to know if I'd ever run a lathe.
Industrial spy, huh?
Yeah, I was spying. Yeah, but anyway, that's where I fell and busted, got broke up on that little dredge over there, Chicken, the F.E. dredge.
What'd you do? You broke your hip?
Yeah. You know those big bones that come up and they're offset into your hip sockets? Mm-hmm. I cracked them both off right there.
Both?
This one here wasn't off. It was just cracked. But this one here, I never felt it. You know, it just felt like as if I had a little kink in my back. And I thought, well, heck, that'll be all right. But finally, I had to go into town. I thought I had kink in my hips good, see? So we was going to town, and we stopped at the Roberts boys over there at Toke. And there was Dick Roberts, the oldest one. He said, he happened to be there visiting with him, see? And he says, Barney, he says, why don't you go to Anchorage? He says, there's an old osteopath there. He says he's sure good at fixing up the truck driver's back. He says, maybe he can fix your back. So I went down there, and that old fella, he worked on me for 5 weeks and got worse. And so on my way back to town, coming home, the road had closed by that time. And there's another one, that one right there underneath is the old one too.
Yeah, well, you're looking at that.
Yeah. Anchorage didn't need more of them. Yeah.
Who'd like coffee?
Hmm?
I know you'd like some coffee.
I'll have a little bit. Coffee. Thank you.
Yeah.
So you went to Anchorage. How about you, Bernie? Didn't help you.
No, I went to Dr.
No coffee for me.
Okay.
Anyway, Doc Haglund told me, he said, when I come to Fairbanks on my way home, I was stopping with Sam. And so that night I said to Sam, I said, my gosh, I better call up old Doc and tell him I'm in town anyway. And so I called him up. And, where are you? Sam, what you doing? I said, nothing. He said, why don't you come over here? You can do that here better than there. So I went over and boy, he asked me more questions. What you been doing? What for? All kinds of stuff, you know. Well, I told him. So I told him that I was, he told me he was going to go on a trip to South America while his boy was flying for wings. He'd get a pass. He's going to take advantage of it. Because he said the kid might get canned sometime or something. He wouldn't get to take it. So he took it.
No coffee. Al, would you like a cup of coffee?
Yeah, I will.
Let's see, you use something in yours, don't you?
No, ma'am.
No?
Thank you. No cookies, huh?
Dead?
I went over. And Doc says, well, I went there. He said, come on. And we went and x-rayed that. It was cracked. And so he said, I'm going to look at it for quite a little while. He said, yeah. He said, I'm going to pin you. He said, how you like that? I said, well, you're doing it too. Whether I like it or not, I guess. And he did. But then, this always kept hurting a little bit. But I thought it would heal eventually, you know.
Your other hip kept hurting.
Yeah. Well, Al and I was in Twitter, I guess, was there too, wasn't he? Or was it just you and me down the river?
Oh, Bert's nephew, Mike, and
nephew. Oh, yeah. Well, I was, had a hold of the rope or something, pulling on the boat, and I didn't look behind me enough, and I flipped over a doggone log, and there was a little kind of a place where the water had boiled out, a hole there, and I fell into that. And Jerusalem, my hip hurt then. Well, that night in bed, it hurt worse. And so when we got to up here, I beat it to town. And that's when Doc was gone. Yeah. That's when he was gone, seeing there was nobody here. So, they told me that there was a good doctor out at Ladd Field, or Fort Wainwright. So I went out there, and it was Dr. Paulshoud. And so he had to tie me up so that would stay apart until they could get some pins to pin it with. So he called up Anchorage for some more pins, because